the CPHI podcast series.
Hello and welcome to the CPHI podcast series. I'm Lucy Chard, digital editor for CPHI Online. And today I'm joined by Daniel Mora Brito from IQVIA to discuss the development of manufacturing operations in Africa. Daniel is based in Geneva, Switzerland, and he works as an engagement manager in IQVIA's EMEA Thought Leadership Team. Daniel's work focuses on exploring current and emerging trends within the realms of global health security, health system strengthening, and equity in access to life-saving commodities and services. Daniel has close to 20 years of experience in the multilateral sector, having occupied advisory positions in the United Nations system, the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria, and a host of civil society organizations. His expertise covers areas such as health policy, development operations, public and private partnerships, and multi-stakeholder coordination. In this discussion with Daniel today, he initially gives some background to the health landscape in the continent, covering some of the greatest threats that we've seen over the years that are still impacting people's lives today, and helping to drive home the importance of improved and localized healthcare on the continent. We discuss some of the economic factors that underpin a lot of the transformations across the region from perspectives both of those in Africa and companies from outside that are looking to invest and expand into this space. Daniel discusses the different actors in the region and what expanding capacities in Africa will mean for patient access in a rapidly growing population. It's a really fascinating discussion, and I can't wait for everyone to hear it. So thank you, Daniel, for joining me on the podcast today. We're going to start off with quite a big question for you. What would you say are some of the biggest threats to human health in the African continent today?
Thanks for the question. And hi, Lucy. It's a real pleasure chatting with you today. Thanks for inviting me to share IQVIA's perspectives on local manufacturing in Africa. So to your question, I would say that alongside the threat of climate change, antimicrobial resistance, and a potential new pandemic, all of which are quite significant issues, Africa bears approximately 25% of the world's disease burden, and it's now facing the challenges of a double disease burden. These are, in my view, the biggest threats in the continent at the moment. Now, Africa CDC is also keeping an eye on the potential emergence or re-emergence of other diseases like Ebola, Marburg, Mpox, measles, dengue fever, and cholera, for example. But of course, I would focus primarily on the importance that the double disease burden or the impact that double disease burden has on the region. Now, this double disease burden or the convergence of infectious and non-communicable diseases is indeed particularly tricky. First, despite major international investments over the last few years, infectious diseases continue to affect the continent and are still responsible for close to 50% of deaths every year. Also, while the impact of some pandemics has been successfully managed, COVID hit the brakes on and in some cases reverted the progress that national and international initiatives had achieved. This was the case of HIV, tuberculosis, and malaria, something that we have seen in the evidence that the Global Fund and various organizations have released after 2021. Now, the second point here is that we need to bear in mind that the prevalence of non-communicable diseases or NCDs is increasing quite significantly due to a number of factors, including population aging, lifestyle changes, infections, genetic predispositions, and insufficient control measures. Now, to put things in context, according to WHO, NCD-related deaths in sub-Saharan Africa rose from roughly 25% in 2000 to about 37% in 2019 and could reach 50% in 2030. To this, we need to add that Africa is the fastest growing continent population-wise as a result of high fertility rates, also a decline in child mortality, and increased life expectancy. And based on these trends, it can reach approximately 2.5 billion people in 2050, which is essentially double its current size. On this point, I have to say also that young people in the region with a median age of about 18.8 years, which is quite low, also means greater need for medicines and health services. So this accelerated demographic change, along with healthcare failures in the continent and insufficient funding for NCDs, can certainly complicate things even more. Also, as I mentioned, these challenges are compounded by other major threats that we need to continue monitoring quite closely, like the effects of climate change on disease progression and health system resilience, the looming antimicrobial resistance pandemic, which is quite a serious one, and the possibility of a new pandemic outbreak, especially seen from the angle of Africa's ability to effectively tackle an event of such proportions.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there, really. There's so many different elements that can influence human health in the continent. And it's important to note some of the sort of more, I guess, flagship diseases, like the infectious diseases there, the HIV and AIDS, the COVID-19 pandemic, Ebola. They've taken up the spotlight, really, especially in the last few years. And they are very, very important. And there's been a lot of work to combat them. And I think there's been, I mean, even in the news recently, there's been advances in these areas, which is really good to see, such as new approvals for J&J's therapeutic for treating HIV in children and things like this. And certain countries in the continent also working to eradicate malaria, which is still very prevalent. So I think it's, yeah, there's definitely a lot of threats here. But there is we're sort of steadily chipping away at, I suppose. And I'm pleased that you also mentioned the non-communicable diseases, because these, I think when most people think about sort of the most prevalent diseases in the area, they don't immediately think of that. But as the population shifts and changes, like you said, these are becoming a lot more prevalent. So there's a lot to consider when looking at improving the healthcare of the continent, really, isn't there? So to build on that, I suppose, why is it so important that the healthcare industry and pharmaceutical companies are looking to continue their work in this area and to build out manufacturing capabilities and try and mitigate that vulnerability that we see across the African continent?
I think that developing a manufacturing capacity in Africa is extremely important and makes complete sense to a number of compelling reasons. And I should start by saying that moving in this direction has been deemed critical as a major public health priority by the African and European Union, the G7 and the G20, and a host of other multilateral players. Now, the basic reasoning behind it all is that domestic, or rather diversified, manufacturing in Africa is essential for national and regional health security, and within that, pandemic preparedness and response, and for countries essentially to achieve their ambitions for stronger and more resilient health systems. And I think you alluded to also to additional threats that can be addressed with better access, for example, to medicines and other health technologies that are actually produced locally in the continent. Now, developing this capacity can also, as I was saying, it's critical to bring life-saving medicines, medical countermeasures, and all sorts of health products closer to those who need them, both in pandemic scenarios and peace times. And I think that it's important to keep a balance between those two different sort of contexts. There is a great effort to produce solutions quickly in the case of a pandemic, but at the same time, we also need to keep in mind that considering the gaps in healthcare in Africa, that local capacity should be able to produce the right type of commodities, again, medicines or health technologies that are needed on a day-to-day basis. We need to bear in mind that most medicines and vaccines that circulate across African markets are produced elsewhere. So between 70 and 90% of the medicines are imported. And this number is about 99% when it comes to vaccines. As we know, this heavy reliance on drugs and supplies manufactured outside Africa was particularly felt during COVID-19, when vaccines to prevent the novel coronavirus were not widely available. And as we also know, this raised issues around the global equity and access to immunization tools, in this case, not only for Africa, but for the majority of low and middle income countries. Now, overall, I would also say that diversified manufacturing also comes with economic benefits for selected production sites. It promotes greater investments in capacity development, Ideally, it reduces the circulation of falsified and substandard medicines, which again is a huge issue in Africa. It encourages the establishment of stronger and more dynamic regulatory environments, and it supports more effective market shaping.
I completely agree. It's really interesting. It's also really interesting, the statistics that you had there on the imports of medicine. And that's quite a, yeah, it's quite a large chunk there. And I think that's obviously going to carry such a big cost with it as well. So could you go into, I mean, you touched a little bit on it there, but could you go into a few more of the economic implications for this on the country itself or the continent itself in terms of those things like import cost and that economic burden, but also maybe some of the economic drivers and things like that for companies in moving their operations to Africa?
So the idea that companies would move their operations to Africa is not necessarily the scenario that some of these discussions are contemplating. Instead, the objective is to rather facilitate the transfer of relevant technologies to enable the end-to-end production of medicines and vaccines that are needed and for which sufficient demand exists, either through current or new manufacturers. So at the moment, we know that there are about 600 manufacturers in Africa with limited research and development capacity. Roughly 80% of them are located in 8 countries, with Northern Africa and South Africa leading the way. Out of all those countries, only 4 have more than 50 manufacturers, while 22 have essentially none. And the main focus of the capacity that currently exists is on formulation and packaging. That said, the current debate essentially focuses on determining multiple factors, and this poses a number of basic questions. For instance, what incentives do companies have to venture into markets that could be well supplied by competitors? What is the role of international organizations and governments in actually ensuring the commercial viability of these products through advanced market commitments or product uptake through the so-called healthy market frameworks that are being promoted by Gavi and UNICEF? And what kind of coordination mechanisms are there in place or that we can actually put in place to de-risk and shape markets and avoid fragmentation, bearing in mind that such fragmentation can actually cause emerging initiatives to fail? So I think that it is important to add that investments required to bring together a robust manufacturing capacity are definitely not small. It takes time and a vast amount of resources to set up the appropriate infrastructure, train the right resources, establish strong regulatory frameworks, and ensure compliance with safety requirements. And clearly, due to the multi-sectoral nature of such an undertaking, multiple public and private players need to come to the table, which emphasizes the value of public-private partnerships in this context. So all of these factors will vary in complexity depending on the type of model that is selected for manufacturing, and the preference seems to be for end-to-end regional hubs up to this point. And it will also depend on the assurances and resources that governments are actually willing to offer for this agenda to move forward. From a market potential standpoint, and this is definitely a very powerful data point here, our own research in IQVIA indicates that the African pharmaceutical market is expected to grow at a 6% 5-year rate to reach roughly $34 billion by 2027, with universal health coverage propelling pharmaceutical spending. And as I brought up earlier, population growth will also translate into greater demand for modern medicines. In the same vein, and according to Gavi and as per some CHAI's figures, the African vaccine market is estimated to grow between $2.8 and $5.6 billion by 2040. And finally, as one would imagine and hope, developing manufacturing capacity in any given country has the potential of positively impacting the local economy, generating employment opportunities, growing local capacity, and also increasing exports.
Yeah, that's brilliant. It's really, really, as I said before, it's really brilliant that you can bring those facts and it really puts it all into perspective and shows us the potential of the area for the future and also all the implications of everything and how it's those trends are looking to develop. It's really, really interesting. I thought it was very interesting you talking about the different public and private players in the industry as well. And do you think that as like a level of responsibility there from those established companies and industries in other countries and those established public and private players? Do they have a level of responsibility to support companies and bodies in Africa to develop their pharmaceutical operations and a level of support to develop their healthcare to support that growing population?
Yes, that's a very, very good question. I think the pharmaceutical industry has been supporting access to life-saving drugs through several mechanisms, including not enforcing patents in low and middle-income countries, except in cases that involve new molecules. This is the case of Novartis, just to cite an example, who also grants non-exclusive licenses to qualified third parties for patented products in vulnerable geographies. At this stage, one could say that probably the most effective way of supporting the establishment of robust pharmaceutical operations in Africa is through this flexible approaches to intellectual property and the on-the-ground support to setting up manufacturing facilities. Ideally, through the establishment of continental bodies like the Africa Medicines Agency and the Africa CDC, which has been running now for quite a while, cooperation across manufacturers should become the new normal so that diversified capacity can grow based on best practices and the replication of success stories. In addition to all this, I actually want to mention that during IQVIA's Africa Health Summit in Kigali in October of last year, our speakers emphasized how important it was to build African capacity through local data and expertise, which can incubate new and powerful solutions for the continent itself and the rest of the world. And in this regard, there was a call to also empower African researchers, particularly female ones, to lead this very important change. Then, just to land things on more concrete facts, we need to recognize that a number of valuable cross-sectoral initiatives are actually taking place already. And just to cite some examples, we have BioNTech's RNA collaboration with Rwanda and also BioVac in South Africa. There's Aspen PharmaCare's agreements with Janssen, Amgen, and Eli Lilly around the deployment of a number of pharmacological solutions across not only South Africa, but also Sub-Saharan Africa. There's Afrigen's mission to facilitate vaccine production in low and middle income countries through technology transfers in 15 countries as a foundation of the mRNA technology transfer program supported by WHO and the medicines patent pool. And we also have the example of the Global Fund purchasing commodities for its own programs on the ground for malaria or TB or any of the other diseases or health system strengthening activities they conduct. From an investment standpoint, also, we have a number of very important examples to cite, including resources that are being deployed by Gavi through the African Vaccine Manufacturing Accelerator, which basically amounts to close to $1.8 billion. We have contributions by the European Commission and also by CEPI, the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovation, and the Gates Foundation, also to Aspen PharmaCare to produce affordable vaccines.
It's interesting as well that you, the tactics around sort of increasing development in the area is very, very interesting too. I think I also read something recently that by having more women in pharmaceuticals in the businesses as well increases the general like success and pushes development and innovation, just obviously quite broadly speaking. But I think that's really, really interesting. And I really love that that is something that is being pushed to be increased in the area. That's really, really great to see. So how, if we move on slightly from that to focus slightly more on patients at the sort of the end of the chain there, how does moving these operations and increasing progress in this continent, how does this increase patients' access to medicine and improve quality of life?
Yes, that's also a great question, Lucy, because at the end of the day, the ultimate objective of what we do is to create positive patient outcomes. And as you know, for a great portion of the population in Africa, having access to quality health services in general is quite difficult. And that, of course, includes access to medicines. Two of the most important barriers that are often noted by the literature, by global health programmatic interventions in our own research at IQVIA are affordability and availability. So, and that leads us to something pivotal in current healthcare dynamics. local production, if properly orchestrated, and I want to actually emphasize that, can manage or ideally remove some of these barriers. And again, the two ones that I'm thinking specifically about are high prices and insufficient supply. For this, however, the right incentives and economies of scale are necessary, especially when it comes to forecasting and addressing demand. As things stand, what we normally see or sort of the common occurrence are stockouts. There's poor forecasting, inability of health systems and individuals to actually afford basic medicines. And that ends up translating as well into higher mortality. We need to definitely shift this dynamic and move into a new narrative in which patients have the ability to afford the medicines they need and also find the medicines actually available in the market. So an important point to keep in mind is that local production capacity can benefit abundantly from the continent's unique and vast genomic diversity. Our experience in IQVIA shows that increasing access of patients to clinical trials is not only able to assist the design of medicines that are more genetically appropriate for a given population, but that these efforts also support access to novel therapeutic solutions across vulnerable patient groups. And these therapies, if I may add, can rarely be afforded by health systems. In our view, in addition to this access dimension, clinical trials can also influence research implementation, which in many cases can yield policy environments that can facilitate local manufacturing and ultimately optimize access. And also to mention something that I think is critical here, local production can certainly drive Africa's ambition to achieve universal health coverage, bringing much needed products closer to patients and also reducing the likelihood of catastrophic expenditures, especially when treatments are non-reimbursable or simply just not available through public insurance schemes.
So leading on from that, in terms of what you want to see in the future, what sort of aspirations do you have for seeing manufacturing and development operations being built out in the continent and the impact of this on population health there?
The aspiration that I and IQVIA share with most players in the global health community is that Africa continues moving towards a coherent, sustainable, truly harmonized and commercially viable manufacturing capacity that strengthens health systems and health security and, as a result, removes barriers to access. To have a better sense of where we're going, we need to revisit the goals set by the Africa CDC, the Africa Medicines Agency, and the Partnership for African Vaccine Manufacturing. And they clearly state the aspiration to produce at least 60% of the vaccines to be consumed in the continent by 2040. In the same vein, if we boil it down to international cooperation and donor-funded programs, Gavi, for example, has been thinking about the possibility of procuring at least 30% of vaccines intended for its own programs from local producers. And this is critical to, again, shape markets and ensure product uptake. Another important point here, as I said, seeing an agile manufacturing capacity in Africa is indeed a mission-critical aspiration for many stakeholders in the context of pandemic preparedness and response. If I may use the case or a case close to our experience, IQVIA's collaboration with the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovation, CEPI, to support the 100-day mission in the occurrence of an outbreak is actually part of the public-private efforts that we're co-leading to connect clinical research and surveillance-generated data. The reason we're doing this is that we believe that the synergies have the power of informing the design of immunization tools that can effectively contain future outbreaks. And naturally, a strong manufacturing machinery is a foundational element of this particular value chain. In terms of success factors to realize these aspirations, arrangements to push forward local manufacturing must be built on some sort of virtuous circle or an ecosystem approach as proposed by WEF's Regionalized Manufacturing Collective. And in such a virtuous circle needs to factor in solid clinical research, capital investment, capable human resources, a resilient supply chain, and a fully functioning and strong regulatory environment. And this is a point I have already mentioned quite a few times because it's one of the key foundations for a solid, again,
it's
manufacturing capacity in Africa. Yeah. And in our view, assessing markets is also critical to determine demand, to understand competition, And as I said before, uptake capacity. Of course, moving this entire ecosystem forward requires viable collaborative business models and innovation-based partnerships across public and private actors. And again, the importance of public-private partnerships comes to the fore in this discussion. Now, to conclude, we cannot forget the absolute paramount importance of setting environmentally sustainable and climate resilient manufacturing operations that make a deliberate effort to minimize the industry's carbon footprint. So in the end, we can kill essentially two birds with one stone.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think that's something that I see quite a lot, that emerging markets really have the space and the capability to build out those kind of things with the support of regulation, with the support of other factors and like learnings from previous markets and things like that. They really have the potential there. And it's important to view this as an emerging market. So there's so much potential in this area to push those themes of innovation and really work towards, like you say, a more resilient supply chain and better patient access and just all of those things that are becoming just so increasingly important to industry actors at the minute. So it's really, really brilliant to see. And there's just so much potential here. And it's going to be an exciting market to watch develop.
Yes, I think this is definitely a critical area in conversations about advancing healthcare in Africa. We're at IQVIA, we're following all of these developments quite closely, and hopefully we will be able to contribute as much as we can to that.
Thanks again to Daniel for joining me on this episode. This is definitely a topic we're both very passionate about, so it was great to be able to discuss in a little more depth and for me to learn about some of the aspects that need to be considered when developing operations in Africa. And it's also very exciting to hear about the potential for the area as an emerging market. If you'd like to hear more from Daniel, make sure that you watch the webinar on CPHI Online on vaccine manufacturing in Africa. And to hear more from us, sign up to the CPHI Online newsletter and we'll make sure to keep you up to date. Thanks again for listening. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the CPHI podcast series. For pharmaceutical news, webinars, events, and more, visit cphionline.com.